As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Of your Toronto Blue Jays and Major League Baseball. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, it is time for Baseball Central. It is Friday, September 23rd, the penultimate Friday of the regular season. And the Blue Jays are getting ready to play the Yankees in a four-game series. First pitch tonight at 7 o'clock. Brian Mitchell against Francisco Liriano. CeCe Sabathia takes on Marcus Stroman. Saturday, Sunday, it's Michael Pineda against Marco Estrada. Monday, Luis Severino against Jay Happ. And then the Baltimore Orioles come into town. The Jays didn't play last night, but there was a lot of movement around them. The Orioles lost. They are now out of a wild card spot as of this morning. The Detroit Tigers swept two games, swept a doubleheader from the Minnesota Twins. They now have the second wild card spot, however, temporarily. And the Houston Astros lost a chance to make up a little bit of ground. They lost to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, but they still have six games left against the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. So if you're the Houston Astros, you're probably feeling pretty good right now. And Kevin Barker, you mentioned off air. Yeah, I think we've kind of assumed that it was going to be between the Orioles and the Jays and the Orioles to see who would get the wild card home game. We just kind of assumed that the next two teams after the Red Sox, you know, whoever won the East was going to obviously go on to the division series. The next two teams are going to be vying for the wild card. And lo and behold, here come the Detroit Tigers, and here come the Houston Astros.
Yeah, well, I think the Tigers, to me, with Verlander's resurgence, as you know, I know he has his hiccups occasionally, and he doesn't throw 99 miles an hour anymore, but he takes a little bit off. I was reading a quote from Brian Dozier, you know, who's had a tremendous year. We talked about him at the beginning of the season, you know, about being a leader, Brian Dozier. I mean, and he wasn't hitting at the time. And I said, well, you can't walk in a clubhouse and be a leader when you're hitting 200. Well, he's not hitting 200 anymore. He's got 42 homers and, you know, he's doing so well at second base. So I heard a quote from him saying the first time through with Verlander, he threw him nothing but fastballs after that at bat because he had a 24-game hitting streak into that game, the second game. And he said after that at bat, I didn't get anything but breaking balls. That's an approach. You the older you get, the wiser you get, what most people do. And you know, Verlander doesn't throw 99 anymore. He's got to invent ways to get guys out second and third time through and give his team a chance to win. And that's all, I think it's whatever it takes mentality with Detroit right now. I'm not real sure that's a good thing for the Blue Jays. It's when you got a guy, now can Verlander be the guy that pitches 163? I'm not real sure because you have to win every one up until that point and he's going to pitch when he has to pitch. But is that scary for the Blue Jays? If that's who you're facing, would be Verlander in 163? Might be tough. He's right-handed. He's an older guy. Throws hard. He's got a nice slider. And they hit. And they're confident. That's, you know, it's, you have to win the games you have to win. But right now, that's a scary team.
I think it would be awfully odd if after everything we've said, everything we've written, everything we've watched this year, the wild card game happens and it isn't the Orioles and Blue Jays or the Reds. I admit I've been as guilty as much as anybody of just kind of assuming that those two wild card teams are going to come out of here. But man, Baltimore, it's almost like Baltimore just, they're doing it. They hit the skids differently than the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
But, you know, they looked, I'll tell you, they looked so exposed against Boston. Like, if I had my choice right now, and I was the Boston Red Sox, and I was sitting there looking, saying, who do I want to face potentially? Do I want to face the Blue Jays or do I want to face the Orioles? I'd rather face the Orioles than the Blue Jays. The Orioles look worse than the Blue Jays right now.
Well, I think you can get them out up. You can get them out up with hard stuff, and I think that's what the Red Sox had figured out in that game. But basically, the Orioles, wrong place, wrong time. They ran into the hottest team in baseball in the Red Sox. And, you know, you got Hanley Ramirez now is you quietly. Now, I say this quietly because Mookie Betts is the MVP of that team probably along with David Ortiz. But Hanley Ramirez, I'm sure in that clubhouse, is quietly one of those leaders on the field. He's happy. He's happy-go-lucky around first base. He's not trying to play left field anymore. He can eliminate that. And he's just going up to the plate, getting a good pitch to hit. It's, you know, the Red Sox right now are a scary team. And I think that's a lot what the Orioles, they just ran into the wrong team at the wrong time. That's what it was. And the Orioles are still a threat. They hit a lot of home runs. And to a man, most of the time, you have to make really good pitches to them. And the Red Sox just did that. That's what it came down to is, you know, they made the Orioles make mistakes in the field with the speed they have and the youth. And they outpitched them and out-hit them. That's what September's all about, right?
Yeah. The Orioles just looked awful, quite frankly.
Well, they got beat. They didn't beat themselves. They got beat.
Yeah, whereas the Jays on a couple of occasions have
well, on the road themselves. on the road trip, can you who beat them? The Blue Jays.
Yeah. The Blue Jays beat them. Josh Donaldson beat themselves.
There you go.
Beat his team. So the last game.
Yeah.
The Jays did catch a bit of a break in that Masahiro Tanaka will not make his start on Monday. Luis Severino will start instead for the Yankees, a forearm issue for Tanaka. Now, the Yankees are saying he will make another start this year, although I would suggest that if the Yankees don't sweep the Jays here, they're basically out of it.
Yeah, sure.
And if that's the case, then maybe if you're the Yankees, you shut down Tanaka for the rest of the year. Luis Severino, a guy that, you know what, has pitched well against the Jays. He's had a couple of decent outings against the Jays, one in particular, but he was kind of shunted to the bullpen this year by the Yankees. He's a guy who still figures, I think, in their long-range plans.
Well, he doesn't have a third pitch.
As a starter.
That's exactly what a lot of young guys.
Second and third time through the lineup,
he's really in trouble. First time, stuff gets him through it. I mean, he throws almost 100. That'll get him through the first time through the lineup. Then you have to invent a third pitch. He doesn't have one. And that's why when he's moved to the bullpen and he can air it out and say, here's my best heater with a little bit of movement, and then here's my best off-speed pitch. Now when you're a starter and you got to go through and guys are laying off that slider because he doesn't want to throw it for strikes, you know, so they lay off of it and he has to throw another off-speed pitch. He doesn't have one.
Brian Mitchell gave the Jays a bit of a hard time the last time they faced him. You expect something different tonight? You expect the fact that these guys have seen Brian Mitchell might make a bit of a difference now?
I don't think so. I think, again, it's, you know, this lineup's right-handed dominant, and the Blue Jays are going to have to go and have that up-the-middle-the-other-way approach and put the ball in play. The more times they put the ball in play, they're going to have success. I just don't know if – obviously, I think it's going to help the power guys to have seen a guy before and know which way that thing's breaking. But most guys throw a fastball, you know, unless you're throwing 100 miles an hour, that 95, I think they should be used to that, right? They should be used to seeing 95 because it's every guy you face now in the big leagues throws 95, but not everybody throws 100. So I just don't think that matters now at this time of the year. I think it's more about the person, the individual going up, having that approach on the on-deck circle, taking it to the plate, eliminating one side of the plate. When you get a good pitch to hit, don't miss it. That's what it's all about. And hopefully they hit 6 home runs.
Well, Jerry made that point when he was in conversation with Brunt and myself that...
Well, they can't score a run any other way, can they?
Well, no. Look, John Gibbons said this all along. They're designed to out-hit their mistakes.
Well, they're going to live and die with it.
They're basically designed to out-hit their mistakes.
They're living and dying with it.
And you know, we could talk this year about how starting pitching has been so good and defense has been so good. And, yeah, it has. It's been better, I think, than we expected. But they still... They've got to out-hit.
Yeah, I hope Carrera's in the lineup. I really do. I hope he's in the lineup. He can bring a little of that hit and run when you want to do it. He can bring that hitting behind the runner. He can bring bunting, put a little pressure on the defense, that kind of thing. So I hope he's in the lineup. You think he'll be in the lineup?
I mean, I would have him in the lineup.
I know you said every day you would have him in, but after that day off and, you know, you would probably be giving.
Who would you sit?
I mean, Batista'd be DHing and he'd be playing right, yeah. Herrera. And Saunders be playing left or right, whichever one. Who knows which side he wants to play.
You do want Saunders bat in there against this kid.
You'd have to, right?
This guy. as much as I'd rather. And again, this is the problem I think John Gibbons is finding himself in right now. I mean, realistically, there are three guys I want DHing right now. I want Batista DHing. I want Saunders DHing. Hell, I might even want Devin Travis DHing. And based on what I've seen from Josh Donaldson, I might have Josh Donaldson DHing, you know, preferably. Obviously, you can't have that. Yeah. But, my optimal lineup right now would be, based on what I've seen, I want Ryan Goins' glove in the game. Yeah. And I mean, I'll tell you, if it's me, it's Donaldson at third, it's Goins at second, it's Travis DHing, it's Carrera in left, it's Batista in right, and Saunders sits, and I bring him off the bench because at this point,
you got to figure what's the bottom of your lineup look like now. If you're an opposing pitcher and you're thinking, okay, if I get through the first five
now
guys,
I got
this.
The weakness, of course,
I can coast through a couple innings.
Yeah, you're leaving yourselves Goins and Carrera at the bottom.
So it's very hard to take out a guy that's got 24 homers.
But you know what? They're not.
As much as you'd like to, it's hard.
But they're not. He's got 24 homers, but it's not like he's been contributing a lot lately.
It's a threat, though. It's about threats, and he's left-handed. And he's going to give Girardi another thought.
Yeah, I'd rather maximize. I'd rather maximize defense. I mean, as long as I've got Saunders on the bench, you know, Girardi's got to think when he brings in another right-hander or a left-hander, because now I can make that move with Saunders.
Just remember the last time that the Yankees saw the Blue Jays in Yankee Stadium, it was basically one righty after another. And there's no managing that way. So you have to figure out some way, no matter how the guy's doing, to mix that up, to just not have a manager go get the next righty up. Bring in the next righty. Because the September call-ups, you can do that now. And you have to sort of mix that up. How do you do that? I think somehow you have to figure out a way to get Carrera in there with Saunders. How do you do that? Somebody's got to be the odd guy out. Is it every day? Probably not. But you have to get some kind of energy in the bottom of your order.
Yeah.
That's all. But yeah. I don't see it today because of the day off. That's what makes it tough, is the day off, and you would be giving Saunders 2 days off in a row.
No,
it's just not going to go well.
And John Gibbons, his sort of default position is to go with the guys he's gone with all year. Unless you give him a real good reason to not do that, he is going to go with the guys he's had all year.
Yeah.
You know, which is why a guy like Upton's not getting in the lineup on an everyday basis.
And I think Brian McCann's starting to hit well, so he might be DHing.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Sanchez obviously is the one guy you look in that lineup. You don't let him beat you, period, end of story. It's not a question now. You don't get cute and think I can get this guy out. You give him your best pitch. If that's off the plate, you try and get him to chase, you don't let him beat you, right? It's about winning games.
What does Francisco Liriano have to do tonight?
Strike one. Stuff's off the charts. He's left-handed. He throws 96 miles an hour. He throws strike one and gets his team swinging. That's what strike one does. Strike one after strike one after strike one. And he did it last time with a slow hook. He did it second time through the lineup with a breaking ball or with a changeup. You do those things. You get guys swinging, you don't get falling patterns, and then you're left-handed and you throw 96. That's something. There's something to do that. So it's all about strike one, and then he expands zones, and you have to respect that 96. So strike one. It's really that simple for him. Simplify it, maybe set up down the middle, mix it up a little bit, and then start getting after it with your best stuff and leave it out there. Do it with authority. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
He does that, he'll have success.
Yeah, I think we've seen enough in snippets so far. And I don't want to start talking about next year, but we've seen enough in snippets so far that I kind of like the idea of having Liriano around for next year. I like the idea of having him a full spring training.
He might be your fourth guy.
A full spring training with Pete Walker and Russell Martin.
Or he might be your fifth guy.
Yeah. But I kind of
that's not bad.
No, I kind of like having him around.
He's got Russell Martin too. For a full season. That's not bad either.
So you look at these matchups: Liriano, Mitchell, Stroman, Sabathia, the lefty finally, Pineda against Estrada, Happ against Severino. Dan Shulman was asked this morning what the Jays have to do in these next 10 games in order to guarantee themselves
6-4.
Wild card. 6-4 to me is a minimum.
Yeah, me too.
6-4 to me is a minimum. 5-5. 5-5 I can see getting in a situation, as Jerry said, where maybe you're getting awfully close to having that playoff for the for the wild card spot. I would think the Jays have to go 3-1 against these guys.
Yeah. I think you have to get it to the Red Sox last three games that they matter.
To you, but not to the Red Sox.
100%. Well, Red Sox are what they are. Mm-hmm. You know, they're probably going to run away with this thing in the next 10 games.
Let me ask you that right now, actually. Does it, because I know we've talked about the Red Sox an awful lot, and I think we've gone back and forth them a couple of times, but it looks now, is it barring something unforeseen, it looks now as if the Red Sox are going to have a comfortable, they're going to win this division comfortably.
Yeah.
Are you surprised at how comfortably they're going to win this division, that they might win it by 6 games? Does that surprise you that given how close this division was all year, we're talking about somebody winning the division perhaps by as many as 6 games?
Yeah, their pitching was terrible for a very long time.
And it's like the light bulb went on.
Yeah, well, a lot of that had to do with the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays The Blue Jays went the opposite direction. That took a lot of pressure off the Red Sox. And, you know, the Red Sox, I really do believe Clay Buchholz and Hanley Ramirez turned that around.
Mm-hmm.
They sort of took all the pressure off the people that were doing it all year, like a David Price. Clay Buchholz sort of said, okay, I did my job. Now you just go out and beat David Price. That's, you hate to say that with a guy that makes $220+ million, but really it is that simple. It takes a lot of pressure off everybody else. They just go out and have a game plan and go about doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Hanley Ramirez, you know, he's had another breakout year, being in a lineup behind maybe, you know, you have two MVP candidates back to back in that lineup, and then you have Hanley Ramirez. That's not bad. So yeah, it is a little bit of a surprise.
Since the start of July, the Red Sox are 23-9 inside the division. 14 games over .500 inside the division.
Yeah.
7-3 against Tampa Bay. 7-3 against the Yankees. 7-2 against Baltimore. They're 2-1 against Toronto.
And they're 15-5 in September. They have the best hitting and best pitching in September in the American League. That's gonna get it done. So is it a surprise? Yeah. It's more of a surprise to me the way the Blue Jays
mm-hmm.
have, you know, sort of not had the quality at bats that we thought they would have down the stretch because of experience and the names on their backs. And they sort of folded in the tent for a little while, and it gave this Red Sox team that does have a lot of names on their backs, and then it sort of let all the youth sort of, you know, energize the names on the older names on the backs, and you see what experience with talent, and then you have, you know, a lot of talent
mm-hmm.
sort of just fill in the blanks. Yeah, it's Red Sox are having a lot of fun, and they look to me like the 2015 Blue Jays.
Yeah, we've been talking about that for the past month or so, how they've looked.
They hit a lot of similarity. They have a scary lineup, and they have David Price starting to figure it out. And we'll have the conversation next week about
who do you start in the playoff? Yeah, we'll have that conversation. I think a lot depends on who
Price
and who
or Porcello.
Hey, I know if it's me, and again it depends.
220 million reasons say not, Jeff.
It's me. It's Porcello, man. Been my best pitcher all year long.
Well, we will see if it's all about winning in Boston.
Well, and you know, Price's track record in the postseason hasn't been great.
Why did you give him $220 million? To make the playoffs or to win the World Series?
Well, I think in a lot of ways.
He starts game one, right?
Man. If I'm playing Detroit, if Detroit wins the wild card, I'm playing Detroit, I'm starting Porcello. If I'm playing Toronto, okay, here's – well, you know, you're not going to play Toronto because the wild card team will be playing the Texas Rangers. You're probably going to end up getting Cleveland. Now, here's where it gets interesting, because they'll get Cleveland. I believe they would get Cleveland in the first round.
Turn them switch hitters around. But make them hit right. I think most of the switch hitters are naturally lefties.
There's a fair amount of balance, though, to a couple of them.
There is, yeah.
But, I mean, at that point, I guess you would just – yeah, it's be an interesting decision for John Farrell to make.
I know you don't like 21 wins, and he may end up with 22 wins in the Cy Young.
Who, Porcello?
22 wins would play.
I think I would, if it's me, I'm leaning towards starting Porcello. If I'm the Red Sox,
and their team's really good with Porcello on the mound. They score like over 8 runs a game with him.
I think I'd also like
– that's a lot.
I, I might also like to have Price start at home, and I don't know how that would work out. I don't know if Boston would get home field.
I just remember when I was there beginning of the season, well, the first month of the season, end of the first month in April, he was really pitching away from the Green Monster.
Mm-hmm.
Why was Price conscious?
He knew
it was there. Price was so good when he was with the Blue Jays and in Tampa Bay was he dominated in. He established in to right-handed hitters. When I saw him in Boston beginning of the year and most of the first half when he was struggling, he's striking out people, obviously, but, you know, going deep in games and giving his team a chance to win wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
It was because he was pitching away from the Green Monster. You can't when you're consistently away with a lot of stuff, big league hitters are going to figure that out. He wasn't doing that. It's going to be very interesting about that home field and where you're, who you're pitching to and where you're pitching. And this is why this time of the year is great. It's great to watch these things. It's great how you're going to, that's not too bad choices though. Either way you go, I don't think you're going to be in trouble.
You know, another reason this is a great time of the year.
No.
Break out the lederhose and the sauerbraten. Get your Wiener Schnitzel warm.
What is that?
It's like a meat. It's like chopped meat and breaded.
Oh.
Get the beer out.
Why have I done this three times this week?
Because the Germans, the German...
Three times!
Because they played midweek games this week.
Huh, lucky me.
They call it, you know what they call it? I think they call it Das English Wich or something like that, which because, see, in Germany, they never used to play midweek games. The English play midweek games.
You know what's
so
funny
it basically
is,
means the German week.
You can't say those names
of course
and you're
I can't
trying
say
to
those
have
names.
Me say them. That's
well,
what's funny about this whole thing.
Yeah, I know.
Okay?
But it's no fun if I do. No one wants to hear me say Eintracht Frankfurt, even if I get it wrong. When you get it wrong, it's funny as hell because of your accent. When I get it wrong, I just sound like dumbass Canadian who can't pronounce German names. When you say it's wrong, it's like having someone stand at the top of the Ozarks and shout, or the Allegheny.
I wish people could see us on TV because up until 2 minutes ago, your face looked like you were just miserable and you couldn't wait to go jump in traffic.
And
now you
happy.
Are so like happy and
well,
like your
song. The song kind of
like you have a flower in your ear. You're just riding down the road on a bicycle, just
it's the song
whistling.
Is, the song is
Dixie
uplifting. The song is uplifting. It means weekend is nigh. It means weekend is here.
I've done it three times this week, though.
I know, but this is a special one.
All right.
We've only got four matches for you today. By the way, your midweek record was 3-3 with three draws. The season so far, you are 12-8, six draws and one perfect.
Yeah,
ain't bad. That's not bad. That's not bad.
Don't hate.
Not bad at all.
Don't hate.
I'm not hating. I'm saying that's pretty good. I said that's not bad. The season's young.
Well, you sound so like, I can't believe that you're 12-8, six ties.
I can't. You'd be so good. If you could predict draws, my friend, you would be so good right now.
I'll never do that. I will say this again. Who wants to watch 90 minutes of a tie?
All right. Anyhow, here we go. Ready?
Let's hear it.
All right. Today on Sportsnet World at 2:30 p.m., Borussia Dortmund against SC Freiburg.
That's a hard one. I'm going to go Borussia Dortmund.
Mm-hmm.
2-0.
That's not bad. That's pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
I might be tempted to go 4-0 because they've scored a crap load. They scored like six goals. They scored 11 goals in their last two matches.
I will go 7-0 before this is over.
All right. Eintracht.
Just because I want to.
Eintracht Frankfurt against Hertha Berlin.
Oh. What's the first one?
Eintracht.
I'm going
Frankfurt against Hertha Berlin.
Frankfurt.
Yes.
3-1.
All right. Werder Bremen.
Never heard of them.
Against Wolfsburg. That's where they make Volkswagens.
Never heard of them. Well, I like a Volkswagen on occasion.
Yeah.
I tipped one of those over once in college, me and my buddy.
Like what?
You can do it.
One of those,
the
like
Volkswagen.
The Beatles?
Yeah. Like he was parked in my spot where I lived
yeah.
in college.
Yeah, and you tipped
and
it
he
over.
Parked there like more than once, and we said, You won't park there no more. So we went out there and tipped it over on his top. Anywho, I'm going to go.
I call bull on that.
I'm going to go. It's
how
very
big,
simple.
How big's your friend?
Very big.
Okay.
Bigger than me.
Really?
What was the second one?
Werder Bremen against Wolfsburg.
I'm going Wolfsburg.
Yeah.
One.
What would you do if I ever just made up a team
name? I would probably
like
say it.
Klockenhammer FC against Hamburg. Now, this is an easy one. I don't even know what I don't even know if we should mention this. By the way, Eintracht Frankfurt
and Hertha
Berlin is at 9:30
right
a.m. Werder Bremen and Wolfsburg is 12:30 p.m. on Sportsnet World Saturday. Also on Saturday. You're going to love this one. Also on Saturday, Hamburg SV against Bayern Munich.
Well, I'm going Bayern Munich, and I so want to say 7-0, but I'm not going to. I'm going to go. They won 3-0 last time. I'm going to go 3-0.
All right. So there you go. Those are Barker's Bundesliga picks. 12-8, six draws, one perfect.
I'm going sweep right here. I'm going 4-0 on that, but
You know what? They're pretty good picks. I'm looking
at
these. They're pretty good picks.
This.
Borussia Dortmund, you should like.
My Volkswagen one's going to be really good.
Yeah, that's. They're both kind of.
That's a true story, too.
Oh, I don't doubt that.
Tip that thing. It's real simple. You get it to rock, and you can tip it over. I don't condone that, so don't go out and try it. But when you're young and in college,
you know the old Volkswagen
guy parks in your spot more than once. Yeah.
The old Volkswagen Beetles used to have the engine in the back, right? I don't know if they still do. I don't know if they moved the engine.
I think so.
The engine
yeah,
in the
yeah.
Back.
Well, that's the trunk's in the front.
Yeah.
Yeah. This guy had the same thing too. I didn't get a Christmas card from him. I'm gonna say that right up front.
How did he get? Was he able to turn it back over?
I have no idea. We laughed.
Well, you must have seen.
It was hilarious. No, we went to class.
No,
first,
you didn't.
Well, yeah.
No,
like,
you're in Virginia
well,
Tech.
Went,
you did
went,
not go to class.
I went like six times a month.
But didn't you want to, like, if I tipped the guy's car over, I'd want to hang around and see what happened when he came out.
Let's just say the my roommate and me were well known around that place, and people knew who did it.
Okay.
Okay, it wasn't like he was going to come and knock and had something to say about it.
All right.
He just moved his car. somehow.
Should Gary Sanchez be a candidate for Rookie of the Year?
1946 says yes, Jeff.
Michael Fulmer's had a pretty good year for the Detroit Tigers, and they will be going to the playoffs. So we will discuss this and other matters with Danny Nobler. He is the MLB lead writer for Bleacher Report, and he'll join us when Baseball Central with the Kaiser. Kevin Barker continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now, back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Baseball Central for September 10th, 23rd. Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. Danny Nobler's going to join us in a few minutes. We're revisiting our preseason picks.
Yeah, you sure
individual
went out,
awards.
You went out on a limb on yours, bud.
Texas
Cubbies. That's
I got a man.
When you were sitting down, that was tough picks, right?
Yeah, I got one of the two. Well, clearly they were because you didn't pick them. I got. I got one of the two Manager of the Year votes in Toronto this year, Baseball Writers Association of America. I've got one of the two votes. There's two in each city.
Oh, you get the vote?
Yeah.
Well, they give that thing to anybody, won't they?
They give that thing to anybody, won't they?
I should get a vote then. If you
no,
get
you shouldn't.
Yeah.
No.
Who are you voting for?
Terry Francona, number
that's
one.
That's a good choice.
You have to list
National
three.
National League.
Well, you only list in the American League. You have to list three. Oh. I'm going to go Terry Francona, Joe Girardi, and Jeff Banister.
No John Farrell?
Screw him. Ah! No chance in hell I'd vote for
John Farrell.
No John Farrell.
Wow.
He could be the only manager in baseball, and I would put him fourth. So
why?
What?
Why?
Well, because I can.
Oh.
Francona's the
is
obvious.
Is that how you vote for those?
Pretty
is that
much.
How everybody votes for those? Just
no,
because they can?
No. Look, well, okay, here.
Does anybody ever get a Jeff Blair vote?
Terry Francona. You cannot argue with Terry Francona as manager.
No, he's
going
to win it. Yeah.
Joe Girardi, take a look at what this team did at the trade deadline and where they are now.
He called up Gary Sanchez. That's basically what he did.
No, he's also, I'll tell you what, he also had them trade his closer and a setup guy away from hang on for a minute. He lost Aroldis Chapman and Andrew Miller and kept his team in the playoff race.
Gary Sanchez got 19 homers.
I know. Joe Girardi, number two. And Jeff Banister, number three, just to piss John Gibbons off.
Girardi.
Jeff Banister, number three, because Texas is the best team in the American League, and I think the managers had something to do with it.
I'm going to say the Red Sox got something to say about that now, about the best team in the American League.
No, Texas kicks their ass in the series. But here's the thing. If you're a Blue Jays fan, what would you cheer for in that series? Probably cheer for a nuclear war between, if it's Texas and Boston. I mean, you can't cheer for anybody.
Somebody to get punched.
Well, you can't cheer for anybody. If the series, the American League shakes down to that, if you're a Blue Jays fan, you cannot possibly want either of those teams to win because they're both reprehensible.
I don't know that.
Well, they are.
It's baseball. If you're a baseball fan, you like to watch baseball.
No, you cheer for the National League. If that happens, you cheer for whoever wins the National League, if those two teams.
Your way of thinking is...
Seriously.
So you wouldn't even watch the American League?
Oh, I would watch it, yeah, in case something nasty happened to either team. But seriously, Red Sox, Yankees, or Red Sox, Rangers, ALCS. What does a Blue Jays fan do? Probably go watch the Leafs.
That's what I'm going to say. I can't wait to see what happens with the play at second base in the playoffs. Something's going to happen.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think
how about that first game of the year that cost the Blue Jays a game? Might come back to...
Funny you should mention that because I had a conversation with John Gibbons about that during the last homestand, and he said, what happens if it comes down to one game and we lose either home field or whatever?
Ain't nothing happens.
I know.
Thanks for coming.
Do you think you're going to... That'll be brought up.
I think it's got to be brought up anyway. It's an awful play at second
base.
That's
a topic for another day. But I agree. It's like I said, I understand why they're doing it, and I'm kind of okay with it.
You don't want to see good defensive play in the middle of the infield anymore, because that's basically what it's done. It's eliminated that.
Well,
so if that's what you want to see, good job. Good job, baseball.
Danny Nobler is the MLB lead writer for Bleacher Report. And Danny Nobler joins us on Baseball Central. Hello, Danny.
Hi, Jeff. How are you?
I'm very good. Okay, I got this. Barker and I are having a debate about this, but I want to talk to you about the Yankees and the Mets. But I want to get your sense on a couple of things specifically Yankee related. One, I'm saying that in my Manager of the Year vote that I have, I'm going to vote for Francona. Girardi's going to be number two, and Banister's going to be number three. Am I overrating Joe Girardi, the impact he's had on things this year?
That's a tough question, because if you look at what they've done and what they had to overcome, he obviously had to keep the team together, and he had to do this with a lot of different players. On the other hand, a lot of what they did in the second half of the season can be attributed to the young players, and really in particular one young player. I know you want to talk about him, Gary Sanchez.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Sanchez, the way he played, it wasn't just the home runs he hit, although obviously that made a big difference. It wasn't just the guys he threw out on the bases, although that made a difference too. It was the energy he brought to the team. When they sold off at the deadline, and then they went through the whole thing with Alex Rodriguez, and he finally left, there was a sense that the rest of the season was meaningless. Not meaningless in terms of the future, but meaningless in terms of what they were going to do now. That changed because Gary Sanchez did what he did and started hitting home runs. It changed the atmosphere around the ballpark, and I think it changed in a lot of ways the way the Yankees looked at themselves. Obviously, he wasn't the only one. They had to get some pitching, other things like that. But that really helped. So, yes, Girardi did a nice job in not allowing the season to just get away from them at that time and at other points when they've had things go wrong. But I don't know if I would – I understand what you're saying. I don't know if I'd put them as high as you do.
All right.
Yeah, you said that made the Yankees change the way they looked at themselves. Does that mean that they will – contend in 2017 just because that Gary Sanchez came up and, you know, the youth movement kind of thing, and we can win with that if we add one or two more pieces. That means that move that process a year sooner?
I don't think it guarantees that they will. I think it helps give them the feeling that if they do the right things and get the right breaks, that they could contend. They still have a lot of work to do, particularly in their starting rotation, and especially if now we know that Tanaka's missing a start, and even though they say it's not right by the elbow, it's still in that arm, the same issue he's had before. And he has been as big a factor for the whole season as anyone they've had because he's been so good and because the rest of the rotation has been so questionable. And if they don't have him, or if they can't count on him being at his best going into next year, then that changes things quite a bit. Because given what the free agent market is for pitching, given what it will cost if they want to trade for a top pitcher, if they don't have Tanaka, that is really, really hard to see them finding a way to put it together. It's not going to be easy anyway, but without him, I just don't see how it could be done at all.
Yeah. Do you think that Tanaka could stay on a field an entire season? Because when you watch him pitch, it's basically a lot of breaking balls, a fastball on occasion, and then more breaking balls. Well, when you hear he has problems with his elbow, that's goes along with a bunch of breaking balls. Do you think he needs to change, or have you heard anything in the Yankees corner that says he may need to change the way he throws on an every outing basis, or it is what it is?
I understand your point on that. Yeah. I don't see that happening. For the one main reason I don't see it happening, he was more of a power pitcher when he came here from Japan. What happened was when he had the ligament issue, he still has a partially torn ligament in his elbow. When he had that, he lost a couple of miles an hour off the fastball. Tanaka is a very good competitor who has a lot of different weapons and is going to find a way to use them. When he had 95, 96, he maybe could have been more of a power, just strictly power guy. He doesn't have that right now. He's been effective a different way. He's been extremely effective a different way. If he tried to go back to being a power guy without the true power, I don't know if he would be the same pitcher. Mm-hmm.
When we sit down and do our analysis on the American League Rookie of the Year, obviously Gary Sanchez has swung himself right into the discussion here. But, you know, I think I'd still be leaning towards Michael Fulmer in balance, would you not?
I think that there's a very good argument to be made for that because, if there had been just the fact that he was here or in the major leagues for the whole year by itself doesn't put him there, but that he was in the major leagues and very good for the whole year, outstanding for the whole year. Gary Sanchez was great for the time he was there. And if nobody had been outstanding for the full year, you could make a very, very good case for him. You could make a decent case for him anyway. But I think I agree with you. I would lean to the guy who had who spent the entire season in the big league.
Yeah,
and effective.
Yeah, now Estrubel Carrera with the Mets, obviously since coming off the DL, I think August 19th, I want to say, has been great for the Mets. What's been the change with him? Why?
I don't know that there's been a change. He's been a good player when he's been able to be on the field. I was at the game last night. And as Terry Collins said, a very professional player. The thing about Cabrera is, yes, he came off the DL, but he's still not healthy. His knee still isn't great, and he's been able to do what he's been able to do. It's really one of the really nice stories of the year, the way he's performed, because somebody else said this last night, when the Mets signed him originally over the winter, a lot of people said, huh, what? And without him, he's the one infielder they have of the four who wasn't basically lost for the season. Lucas Duda has come back but still isn't really playing, and the other two are gone for the year. And Cabrera is not healthy, but he's been able to do things like he did last night. And if they get into the playoffs, which they still have a very good chance of doing, he's going to be a gigantic reason why.
If they get in the playoffs, does Terry Collins come back next year?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think there can be an argument that can be made to bring him back anyway.
Right.
There's a lot of Mets fans who don't want to hear that right now. There's a lot of anger about Terry Collins.
Why is there so much anger about him, Danny?
A part of it is his moves within games leave him open to question.
Okay.
Part of it is he's very—he tends to be probably too honest in press conferences. At least two times this year, he's admitted after a game that the reason he didn't make a move was he didn't think of it at the time. And that, for a manager to say that, is almost disastrous.
Right.
On the other hand, with the injuries they've had, you talked about Joe Girardi keeping his team alive and keeping his team from falling apart. Terry Collins has had to do it. He's lost three-fifths of his rotation and three-quarters of his starting infield. And, you know, it's one thing after another. I mean, they thought that Steven Matz was going to pitch for them tonight. Yesterday, Matz comes in and says, no, my shoulder's hurting again. The same thing happened to them last week. They thought Jacob deGrom was coming back to the rotation, and the day before that happened, had to announce, no, he said he's having surgery. And Terry definitely has had this, oh, no, not again feeling. And I know, he said last night, he said when the trainer walked into his office yesterday, he had an idea what it was, and he said, don't tell me. And yet they're right there, and with their schedule, they still, even though they just lost three in a row to the Braves, and they easily could have lost that game last night, they still should get in.
Danny, we're going to let you scoot. Appreciate you doing this. Have a great weekend.
Hey, great talking to you guys.
Danny Nobler's the MLB lead writer for Bleacher Report, and the Mets. The Mets are hanging in there. I really think we're going to see one of those bizarre playoff scenarios in the National League. I'm not certain about the American. I think the American League may get done and dusted.
Yeah.
But I think that National League is just going to be – there's going to be something funky going on with that wild card race. And I wouldn't put it past the Mets to stay in it. I have no idea how they're doing it right now. I mean, Jose Reyes, for God's sake, is hitting home runs for the Mets.
Yeah, and Jay Bruce has been awful for them.
Jay Bruce has not been very good.
Mm-hmm.
And you've already heard Danny Nobler say they got a manager that a lot of people don't like. But, damn, this is the thing about managing. If Terry Collins takes his team to the playoffs this year, you're looking at a guy who's gone to the World Series and to the playoffs.
Yeah.
Probably going to lose his job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand that you can sit there and look at a guy's in-game dealings, and we obviously don't look at Terry Collins through the same lens as Mets fans or Mets management does, but man, I'd have a hard time. And it's the same thing in this market with John Gibbons. I don't know what John Gibbons has to do to keep his job. I would presume the very least is go to the playoffs. But if you're Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins, how do you get rid of a manager who has taken your team to the ALCS and to the playoffs for the back-to-back years for the first time in 20 years? I don't know.
Yeah. It's changed. Well, again, I think the Mets may have gotten to the World Series a little bit too soon.
Yes.
And that hurt everybody in that organization because they weren't ready for it.
No.
And now they're expected to do it. And, you have all those injuries, and it's all about pitching and defense and some timely hitting, and they're not getting a lot of that, and all their pitchers are hurt. And, it is what it is. But managers to come out and say, I didn't think of doing it at the time. Man, come on.
Yeah, that's probably
especially in New York.
Probably not something you want to hear from your manager.
In New York?
Yeah, I thought about it, but yeah.
Yeah, but I didn't think. Oh, I just thought of that, actually, when you said
it's a good idea. What? We should have done that.
Why didn't I do that?
Anyhow, that's it for Baseball Central today. Hockey Central at noon is next for Kevin Barker, Danny Nobler, and for Brunt, who was here in spirit, even though he wasn't here personally. Stop flexing. For those gentlemen, I'm Jeff Blair. Thanks for joining us in Baseball Central. Don't forget, four games against the Yankees. It's a wraparound weekend series. The Jays will play the Yankees Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Saturday's game, a 4:07 first pitch. Enjoy the baseball. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you Monday when Baseball Central returns on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.